Okay, so Gemara, we're just starting on the top of Kuf Chav Amud Bet, about 7 lines down. My Gzeira Shava. The Gemara wants to know what's the Gzeira Shava of Zeh Davar, Zeh Davar. Zeh Vadar doesn't, what does the Gzeira Shava teach you? Titania. Nehmer Khan, Zeh Davar. Vrenar Mar Lahalan, Zeh Davar. So it says that we know by Shchutei Chutz, it says Zeh Davar, and also says Zeh Davar by the Roshei Matot, by Nidarim. So now, what are the limud from them? Mala halan aron avanav v'chol Yisrael, avkan aron avanav v'chol Yisrael. So just like over there, it says when the zeh davar, it says it applies to Aron, his children and all of Klal Yisrael. So to over here, it applies to all. Umakan roshei matot by the darim that it says roshei matot, avla halan roshei matot. Also by shchutei chutz, it means roshei matot. So we amar mar. So they're going to explain what each of these means. What is the Gzeira Shava? Malahalan Aronovana b'chol Yisrael, Avkan Aronovana b'chol Yisrael, the Mai Hilchaso. So what does that teach you? What does it mean that just like by Shchutei Chutz it applies to Aronovana and b'chol Yisrael, it also applies to Nedarim? So Amar Vacha Bar Yochav Lamar, Shafarat Nedarim Shlosha Hedyotot. That comes to teach you that Afarat Nedarim is, or really, Hatarat Nedarim. Hatarat Nedarim does not only apply to Chachamim or to Roshei Matot, but also applies to Hedyotot. So when it says, wait, Baha Roshei Matot K'tim Bei, it says Roshei Matot. How can you have a Gzeira Shava that says not what it says explicitly in the Torah? So Amar Rav Chista, Amar Rabbi Yochanan B'Yachid Mumche, Achanan B'Yachid Mumche. So that's what we're going to get to in today's daf. But that Roshei Matot tells you that with a single Yachid Mumche, you can be Matir Nidarim. So that means that each item teaches you one thing. The Roshei Matot teaches you that if you're a Rosh Mateh, I mean that you're a Mumche, you're Tamir Chacham, then even a single Tamir Chacham can be Matir Neder. On the other hand, what is the Gzeira Shava? The Gzeira Shava teaches that even Hedyotot are Ra'uyim to create a Tarat Nidarim, but there you need three. So you have to have, because they have to be like a Beis Din. So now, Umakan Roshei Matot, Avlahanan Roshei Matot, Namai Hilchusot. So how do you apply the Roshei Matot from the Darim to Shchita Chutz? Amar Rav Sheshes Lamar, Shiyesh Sheila Behektish. To teach you, just like there's a Tarat Nedarim by a regular Neder, the same is true with something that you're Makdish. When you're Makdish, you're basically, or essentially creating a Neder to give to Hektish, or to do something for Hektish. So the ability to unwind that means that you can do Hatarat Nedarim by Hektish. So Gemara says that works well according to Beit Hillel, but not according to Beit Shammai. Why? Beit Shammai, Damri Ein Sheila B'Hektesh. What are you going to do with Beit Shammai, who says there is no such thing as undoing or being Matir Neder B'Hektesh? It's not. We have a Mishnah. Beit Shammai Omrim, Hektesh Ta'ut Hektesh. Beit Shammai says, even if you make something Hektesh by accident or by mistake, it still holds as Hektesh. I mean that once you make something Hektesh, we're not so interested in why you made it Hektesh or how you made it Hektesh. Once that happens, it's irreversible. Even if it's a mistake, even if you, well, otherwise would allow you to be Matir Neder, they don't think that's an issue. But Beit Hillel Omrim Eino Hektesh. So Beit Hillel says, no, that's not Hektesh. You make a mistake, right? That's equivalent to what Hatarat Nedarim says, that the premise by which you made something Hektesh is mistaken. So too, if you make a mistake, I mean not so too, but that's the original premise, is that when you make a mistake, that's not Hektesh. So all this explanation works well according to Beit Hillel. But according to Beit Shammai, who says that's not true, how are they going to explain the Gzeira Shava that teaches you that Roshei Matot apply to Shchutei Chutz? So hi, Zeh v'Zeh, my of delay, what are they going to do with it? Zeh ha-davar de Shchutei Chutz mi-bayle. We need it by Shchutei Chutz. Why? To teach you, it's a miut. Zeh is a miut. To teach you, ha-shochet hu chayav, einu chayav al ha-molek. When you do something outside of the Mikdash, when you do an avodah outside of the Mikdash, you're only chayav on shchita outside of the Mikdash. You are not chayav on melika outside of the Mikdash. What's melika? Melika is the way that the birds, right, were shechted in the Mikdash. That was through a tziporen, through the back of their neck. But the melika is only a valid form of quote unquote shchita in the Mikdash. It's not a valid form of shchita outside of the Mikdash. I mean, outside of the Mikdash, it isn't any form of avodah. So therefore, only shchita, which is a valid form of killing animals for kashrus outside of the Mikdash, will also obligate one or make one chayav in shchutei chutz. That means that even by birds, if you shecht a bird outside of the Mikdash, you'll be chayav for shchutei chutz, even though in the Mikdash you'd have to do melika. Because shchita is the vehicle by which animals are killed outside of the Mikdash. So when you're doing shchutei chutz, you have to do something that's valid in chutz. When you're in the Mikdash, you do what's valid inside. Zeh davar de Roshei Matot mi bayle. And what do they need the Zeh davar by Roshei Matot? If they don't learn the Gzeira Shava, then they need the Zeh davar by Shchutei Chutz to make a miut. The Zeh davar by Roshei Matot by Nedarim, what do they need that for? The Chacham Matir vein Baal Matir. to teach you that the vehicles that are used to undo or unwind a neder are different. A baal, a husband, has the right to be mefer, or to nullify the nedarim of his wife, as well as a father to his daughter. That is called hafara. Hafara is, it's interesting here, the Rashbam says, definition of the word hafara means called davar kiyum a ne'ekar, something that would otherwise be permanent or standing, and then is undone, umit badel belotam, and is ruined or taken away without reason. That's called hafara, which is basically nullification. The nullification here by the baal or the father do not require, right, real reasons why they do it. It just, they have the ability, it's their right to do it. Now the Gemara does say it has to be, for a husband, it has to be devarim shebeno leveina, right, that we learn out from the psukim. But in general, they don't have to say, as opposed to a hatarat nedarim, which requires you to come up with some reason why the whole premise or the underlying premise of the neder was mistaken, right, or false. Here by hafara, we don't need such a thing. So that's why the term used by the baal is mefer, which means to nullify without reason, whereas the term used by the chacham is matir. Matir neder means that he has to come and figure out a way to change the status of the neder to matir, to unwind it or loosen it. How do you do that? He has to come up with a petach neder. But either way, the concept here is that there are two vehicles, and the vehicles are not open to both parties. The baal and the father can only use hafara, and the chacham can only use heter. And that's what Zed Davar is. The mute comes to teach you that there's only one vehicle for each individual. Ula Beit Shammai, delayed luhu gzera shava. So now, Beit Shammai, now we know it doesn't have the gzera shava, hafart nedarim b'shloshah hejiot minaluhu. How do they know that you could do hafart nedarim with three? And that was learned by Beit Hillel, a day that it says, Aron uvenav l'chol Yisrael, and they have a gzera shava from shchutei chutz to nedarim. That's how Beit Hillel did it. Where does Beit Shammai know it from? After Lum and Itanya, they have a brace of Eidaber Moshe Modei Hashem al Bnei Yisrael. Hashem Moshe speaks to Moadim is in Parshat Amor to Bnei Yisrael. So Rabbi Yosef Gli Omer Modei Hashem Nemru Shabbat Breshit Lo Nemra. It says Modei Hashem and not Shabbat Breshit. But as I Omer Modei Hashem Nemru Afar Nedarim Lo Nemra. Right, these are cryptic statements. The Gemara is about to explain them, what they mean. Just a small note here, it's called Shabbat Breshit, which it's interesting that Rashbam takes time to explain this. Because Shabbat's Breshit, as opposed to Shabbat Shabbaton. The term Shabbat is not unique to Shabbos that we know, but rather it's used by all the Moadim when it's saying by Yom Kippur and by other than the Moadim, it says Shabbat Shabbaton or Shabbat Hil Hashem. I mean, Shabbat is not a term that means Shabbos as we know it, every 7 days, but Shabbos is a term for anything that has a Isur Melacha, that one is Shovet in. So therefore, the Gemara, when it's talking about Shabbos, when it means Shabbos, it talks about Shabbos Breshit, to indicate the one that is every 7 days, and not the term that means to be Shovet mi Melacha. Right, so now, what is the explanation of this brisa? So Rabbi Yossi, or either Rabbi Asi, Rabbi Yossi, Baron Natan, Gamir La, he learned this brisa, Lamat Nitan, below Yadal Le Frushe, he didn't know how to explain it. Also, Batrei Rav Shesha, the Narda, he went after Rav Shesha to Narda to find out what it meant. Vlashkha, he wasn't there. Also, Batrei, the Mechuzah, he kept going, tried to find him, he traveled to Mechuzah afterwards. Ashkha, he found it. Amalei, Maimo Adei Hashem Nemeru, Shabbat Breshit No Nemra. What does that mean in the brisa? So he explained to him, Amalei, Mo Adei Hashem Tzrichim Kiddush Beitin, Shabbat Breshit and Tzricha Kiddush Beitim. That only the Moadim require Kiddush Beisdin, meaning that the Tzavis, that the Moadim themselves do not require Kiddush. They were talking about Kiddush HaChodesh, but they require Kiddush HaChodesh in order to establish the date on which the Moed will fall out. So they require Kiddush, which is Ayudei B'nei Yisrael. B'nei Yisrael, the ones who are Mekadesh the Chodesh. And therefore, the determination of when the Moed falls, or when the Yom is Kadosh, is by the Beis Din being Mekadesh the Chodesh. On the other hand, Shabbat Breshit requires no Kiddush. You don't have to go on every Sunday, every Yom Rishon, and say, Hayom Yom Rishon, right? And therefore, Shabbos will be on the seventh day, or Mekudash Shabbos in 7 days. You don't have to establish any count that makes it that the seventh day will be Shabbos. It's automatically the seventh day is Shabbos. And therefore, obviously, the Gemara in Beitza, which always talks about the difference in the brachot Yom Tov and Rosh Chodesh between and Shabbos, where on Shabbos you always say Mekadesh Shabbat, whereas on Yom Tov and on Rosh Chodesh you say Mekadesh Yisrael Ve'azmanim or Kadesh Yisrael Ve'Roshei Chodeshim. Gemara Beitz explains because by Shabbos it's Kitchi V'Kaimel, right? That it's already Kadosh. You don't need any intervention on Yidei Yisrael to make it Kadosh. On the other hand, it's Mekadesh Yisrael Ve'azmanim is because you need Yisrael to make the Zmanim Kadosh. Without the Kiddush HaChodesh, there is no Zmanim. And without Yisrael, there is no Chodesh, because you need Bnei Yisrael to create a Piyariyah to Mekadesh Yisrael Chodesh. Alright, so now, the Gemara says, okay, but why do I need this limud from the Braisa? Because Sakotat Chamina Hovikhtive Gabi Moadot, the fact that Shabbos is included in the Parshat HaMoadot, to buy Kiddush Beis Din. I would have thought it needs to have a Kiddush Beis Din, Kimoadot, like the other Moadot. Kamash Balon, right, that's not the case, that it's Moadei Hashem are the ones that require the Kiddush Chodesh, but Shabbat Breshit does not require Kiddush HaChodesh or any sort of Kiddush in order to happen. It's Kiddush V'Kaimo. And what is Shabbos doing in that Parsha? Right, if it does not conform to the Moadei Hashem, so it's probably, and this I heard from Rav Rosenzweig many, many years ago, which is what we say in Kiddush, Ki Hu Yom Tchila LeMikrei Kodesh. Right, it's the first of the Mikrei Kodesh that's found in Parshat Emor. So the simplest way to read that when we say Kiddush on Friday night, it means it's the first one mentioned. It says, Ela Modei Hashem. Right, these are Moshe Modei Hashem of Bnei Yisrael. And they list them. What's the first Moed that's mentioned there? It's Shabbos. So that's Yom Tchila LeMikrei Kodesh. So that's the easiest way to read it. But Rav Rosenzweig explained, and I think it's very nice, is that Shabbos is the paradigm for any other Moed. Whenever you talk about Moed or Yom Kadosh, you compare it to Shabbos. Shabbos has Isur Malacha. Shabbos has a certain tenor to the day. And then when you look at it as Yom Tchila Mikrei Kodesh, when we talk about Yom Tov, what's Asur on Yom Tov, we say all the Malachot that are Asur on Shabbos are Asur, except for Ochel Nefesh. So again, the paradigm by which we're measuring Yom Tov is against Shabbos and Yom Kippur. So Shabbat Shabbaton is just like Shabbos. So anytime we look to a Moed, we look to the Moed and say, okay, how is it different than Shabbos? And so therefore, it's Yom Tchila LeMikrei Kodesh. That's what Shabbos is doing. The Shabbos sets the standard. And then once we have that standard, then we look at all the Yom Tovim relevant or relative to Shabbos. Now, what's the second line in the Braisa? My Moedei Hashem Nemru, Afarat Nedarim Lo Nemra. What does that mean? So Moedei Hashem Tzrichim Mumchim, Afarat Nedarim Ina Tzricha Mumchim. That's exactly it. Moedei Hashem require Mumchim, mean that not just any Beis Din can be Mekadesh the Chodesh. You need three Mumchim to create Kiddush HaChodesh. How do I know that? Because who was the first Kiddush HaChodesh given to? Moshe V'Aaron. So we know that there's no one greater than Moshe, right, or Aaron individually, yet Hashem demanded that both be there for Kiddush HaChodesh. So Moshe V'Aaron, and since you can't have a Beis Din Shakul, so two is not enough, you need three. So you need three Mumchim. So by Nidarim, that would be the exclusion of the Parshat Nidarim, that the Moadim require Mumchim, but Moadim don't. You have the same problem, Va'aroshe Matot Ktiv. It says explicitly by the Nidarim that you need Roshe Matot, which indicate that you do need Mumchim. So I'm Rav Chista. This is the original Rav Chista, which we quoted before, right? About, doesn't it say Roshe Matot when they had the Gzera Shava to say that you can use Hedyotot? So here's the original Rav Chista. I'm Rav Yochanan B'Yochid Mumche. Roshe Matot comes to teach you Yochid Mumche works. So that's the balance here. The balance here is that Moadei Hashem require Mumchim, Nidarim don't. Yet it says Roshe Matot by Nidarim. So Roshe Matot means Mumchim are only one. The difference between the Moadim and Nidarim is that the requirement of three mumchim is only by Moadim. By Nidarim, you only need one mumchim. As opposed to the Moadim, which three mumchim, by Nidarim, you have three hedyotot. So that would be the difference. It differs in both ways. That it's three hedyotot and one mumche, and whereas the Moadim are three mumchim. Tanan Hatam. So this Mishnah is brought down. So the last Mishnah in Tanit. It's brought down here because of the one of the explanations of why it's such a good day, which we'll see in a second. There are no better days to Israel like the 15th of Av and Yom Kippur. So, Shein Benot Yushalayim Yotzot. And on those days, the daughters of Yerushalayim go out to play Lavan Shu'alim. They go out with clothes that are borrowed. Meaning that they leveled the playing field. And everybody had to borrow clothing. Nobody took their own clothing. They went out and danced in the Mecholot. And they used to pick their husbands out of these women. I mean, the husbands used to pick these women for their wives out of the women that were there. So now the Gemara said, Bishlam, Yom Kippur, Yom Slicha, Mechila, Yom Shnitim, Valuchot, Achronot. I can understand why Yom Kippur is a day of Simcha, because that's the day that Bnei Israel received, right, pardon from Hashem, Slicha, Mechila, the Gabei Masea Egel, and they received the Luchot Achronot. So it's a Yom, the completion of the Yemei Amarachamim, that Moshe's up there for the third time. They get the new Luchot, Hashem forgives them, and they've regained their status that they had at Har Sinai. So of course it's a great day, of course it's a day of Simcha, which is interesting. The way the Gemara reads to me is that the Simcha is for Bnei Israel. The Simcha is that they were forgiven, and the Simcha is that they received the Luchot Achronot. The Rashbam words it a little differently. He says, "B'yud b'tishrei yom kippurim nitratzei ha'makom b'simcha li'Israel." He says, on the 10th of Tishrei, Hashem forgave Bnei Israel b'simcha, happily. So he says the Simcha here, or at least one aspect of the Simcha, is not referring to Bnei Israel, but rather to Hashem. That Hashem forgave them b'simcha, as opposed to what I would have read it as, that the Simcha is to Bnei Israel, that they were forgiven. The Rashbam. It's interesting Rashbam. I don't know if I would have. And then he, because I think he's dealing with the fact that why did the Gemara bring two things? That it's Yom Slicha Mechila, and it's, they received the Luchot Achronot. So he says, the reception of the Luchot Achronot is Bnei Israel. So what's the Slicha Mechila? That's the Simcha Yedei Hashem. So he reads it as two different parties.
I wouldn't
have said
that as being mutually exclusive.
Right, I agree. I would agree they're not mutually exclusive, except I just wouldn't have read, if you read the Gemara just straight out, that wouldn't have been my first, right, inclination to say the Simcha refers to Hashem. I say that that's Yom Tovim, is talking about Bnei Israel, because we were forgiven, therefore we're B'Simcha. So, but I agree with you, they're not mutually exclusive. All right, so now, the Gemara wants to know, but, Elach HaMishra Seba'av Mahi, what's so good about the 15th of Av? So this is a famous Gemara, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Yom Shehutru Shvatim Levo Zeh B'Zeh. It's the day that the Shvatim were nitar to marry each other. So this is something that's not obvious, but Hacha Avakim Lehu, the Rashbam says. That's what they knew, that this was the day they made the drasha, my darush. What was the drasha they made on the 15th of Av? Zeh Davar, Davar Zeh, Lo Yehei Noheg, Galav Dar Zeh. The drasha that we just did, and that's why this Gemara is over here, is because the drasha to be matir, intermarriage between, use that term loosely, intermarriage between Shvatim, was done on the 15th of Av. So it was a day of Simcha that they were allowed to, we didn't worry about Hasavat Nachala, or basically that the understanding over here is either that Drasha was done on that day, or by that point in time, all those that had lived in the Midbar, which was the door it was spoken to, those that were in Arvot Moav had passed away. I mean, there's a certain point in time where they're no longer around, the people who lived in the Midbar, therefore the Tzivu is not applicable to them. So they reached a point, and this sounds like by Ari Aretz, that at a certain point, that on Tu B'Av, they reached a point where the either majority or most of those people were not there, and therefore was no longer applicable, or they were too old, so it was no longer applicable. So that's happened on the 15th of Av. Rabbi Rechana Amar Rav Yochanan, Yom Shehutav Shevet Ben Yamin Levo Bakal. The day that Shevet Ben Yam was allowed to remarry into Klal Yisrael, because of the problem, it's the problem of Pelagish B'Giva, Dechtiv, Ish Yisrael Nishbam Mitzpeh Leimor, Ish B'Meno Yitem B'Tol Levin Yamin Leisha, that they made the Shua there in the battle with Pelagish B'Giva because of the difficulties, I mean the number of casualties that were caused to Bnei Yisrael because of Binyamin. And so Bnei Yisrael took a Shua at that point in time, and they said that, right, we no longer will give any of our children to marry into Bnei Binyamin or into the Shevet Binyamin. Later on, they regret having done that because they basically are only 600 men left from all of Binyamin, and basically a whole Shevet is going to be eliminated from Klal Yisrael. They realize that that's an error, so they have to do something to rectify the problem. We spoke about that the other day. Yavesh Gilad contributed 400 women after they killed out the entire Yavesh Gilad, except for 400 women. And the additional 200 were from what we call the dance in Shiloh, where they had the women dance, and then they were chotef. They didn't give their daughters, but they came and they took the women. And then the later problem, and this is the drasha, is after that generation, what happened, and that's the drasha they said, Ish mimenu leitem b'no l'binyam nisha, my darush mimenu v'lo b'banenu. I mean that the shvuah only apply to us. We will not give to our Shevet Binyamin, but Benenu, they are allowed to give it. So it was exclusive to that door. Very similar to our Bedrasha, that it only applies to this generation, not to the future generations. So afterwards, so that was a Simcha. Again, these explanations of Tu B'Av are not mutually exclusive. It's just this is the Mesorah that each Amora had from his Rebbe, but they could all be true. It's not that they don't have to be true. And this is.
I'm saying, you know, it shows a transition from
generation to generation. All right, that's a nice idea. That tubab is a generational change. All right, all these three explanations, very nice. So Rav Dimi bar Yosef, Amar Rav Nachum, Yom Shekalu Bo Meitei Midbar. This is the day that the Matei Midbar stopped dying. So this is what Shaul mentioned before. That Tu Ba'av was the day that the Matei Midbar Achlo Kalu Matei Midbar. Until the moment that the Matei Midbar died out, Lo Yav Diburi Moshe. Hashem did not speak to Moshe. Shnemar Vehi Kasher Tomukol Anshei Milchama Lamut. All the people Anshei Milchama, those that were in the count, right? The Tzva, Yotzei Tzava, 20 to 60 that died out. Lamut Mikerav Am. Samech Leim. Right afterwards says, Vehidaber Hashem Eilai Leimor. Eli haya dibur. So the Rashbam brings two possibilities. What the drasha is either smichut of the two parshiyot, which seems to be the simplest explanation, that kasher tamu kon sheador, then vayidaber Hashem al Moshe. That's when the dibur appears to Moshe, because there's an absence, meaning that there's a gap in Sefer Bamidbar. There's 38 years missing from Sefer Bamidbar. The last thing you have is Masei Korach, right? And then right after that you get to Chukas, which is talking about the 40th year. So depending on when Masei Korach happens, there's basically a huge gap in Sefer Bamidbar. There is only from the first 2 years of the Midbar, and then in the 40th year of the Midbar, the 38 years are missing. So that's exactly what the Gemara says here, that when they stopped dying, that's when Moshe got the Dibur again. Nothing happened for 38 years. There was nothing to talk about. The other possibility, the Rashbam says it's Eli, that the word Eli was extraneous here. Eli indicates some sort of personal speaking or something that was unusual, and therefore the extraneous lashon of Eli is what causes them to make such a drasha. Now, what does it mean that the Matei Midbar stopped dying on Tu B'Av? So everybody knows the famous midrash, which is quoted by the Rashbam over here. It brings it from the Midrash Eicha, is that every year on Tisha B'Av they used to go and dig their graves. Everybody would dig their graves. Everybody would lie down. And then in the morning they would say, Kamu achayim mitoch hamitim, those that are alive get up. And every year they would die out some 15,000 or so of them, 15,000 plus of them, until they reached the 40th year. And the 40th year they lay down, and then everybody got up. So they thought, Hashem utahu b'chodesh, that they made a mistake. So every night they did it, until they reached the middle of the month. When they saw the full moon, they said they couldn't make a mistake anymore. It's clear that the gzera nitbatla, that the gzera is over, and therefore that was the simcha of Tu B'Av. So Tosfos jumps, it's very interesting, the Midrash is very problematic. And he says, I don't understand, he says, Vakasha Tuva. He says, there are a lot of questions on this Midrash that in the explanation of Rabbeinu Shmuel. So let's start with each one of them. Meaning that if you say, there's Yerushalmi that says, and this is based, everybody knows the same Midrash, that when they reached 60, they died every year. So if that's the case, then there are 15,000 people who didn't die. Meaning that if in the 40th year, the Gzera happened when they were 20, and now you're in the 40th year, how come they're not dying in the 40th year? I mean, why should it be that the 40th year there is no Gzeirah? Doesn't make any sense. They should have died. I mean, that doesn't make any sense that there wasn't a death in that year. Why should they be getting up? That's number one. Number two is, why did the Dibur wait to speak to Moshe? Moshe already should have been able to speak to him. Meitu kol meitei amidbar already happened the year before. The fact that nobody dies this year already means that they completed the previous year. So why did Hashem wait to speak to him until after that day? I mean, I should have spoken to him the year before. Right? In addition to that, the number that should have died, the Medrash that says that 15,000 or so died each year, it really should be 16,000 died each year in order to get to the full number that are there. So anyway, he goes, Tosfos has all these questions, and...
I don't know if you said this in here, but Hashem literally didn't speak to Hashem.
Right, the Rashbam says that. I'm going to get to that. Right, the Rashbam avoids the problem, some of the problem, by saying that he did speak to him, but he didn't have pel peh dibur bo. Right? The Rashbam redefines what it means that he didn't speak to Moshe. He didn't speak to Moshe whenever Moshe wanted. He only came to Moshe when there was a necessity. He came to him as a necessity, like, and what's his example? His example is Masei Korach. This is very interesting. He says, either you have to say that he didn't have direct contact, either came through him through a Urim Betumim or a Malach, and he didn't get a direct dibur from Hashem, or that he'd only speak to him pe'al-peh when it was at Makom HaTzorech. And what's the Tzorech? There's only one thing that's found between Masei HaMeraglim and the speaking to Moshe. What's the only thing that's found between them? Masei Korach. So that really depends on the Midrashim, when Masei Korach happened. Right? It's a Machlokes HaRishonim, when Masei Korach happened. And there, even we saw last week that Masei Korach might have happened before Masei HaMeraglim. So if it happened before, then it's not an issue at all. You could say that he didn't speak to him at all. The only question is, if you think that Masei Korach took place after Masei HaMeraglim, then you have to deal with that. Right now, so what does Tosfos do? How does he explain it? It's Venir al Rabbeinu Tam. This is a very interesting Rabbeinu Tam. Here we're talking about the Midrash Eicha, Shalom Yeru Lamut, Ela B'Shana Achuna, Bitel Mehem Agzira, V'Nishur Mehem Tetva Velef. He says there was a B'Telat Agzira. 15,000 people survived. Out of all the heads, should have died. The last year, Hashem was mevatel the gzera. They should have died, and they didn't die. So then, oh, what about? Oh, very good. This is an explicit pasuk that says that, right? Lo nishar mehem, right? El kalev ben yifuneh b'Yeshua ben Nun. Anybody who was in the first count, there's nobody left except for Yeshua and Kalev. So how can you say that there are another 15,000 people that survived? So he says, okay, first of all, he gives two possibilities. One is, all those that were supposed to die, these weren't supposed to die. Hashem was mevatel the gzeira, they're not supposed to. So all of those from the first count that are supposed to die, they're not here. But these 15,000 weren't supposed to die because Hashem was mevatel the gzeira. One possibility. The other possibility he gives, which is interesting, is that when the gzeira, the original gzeira, it's a question of ad ba'ad v'chlal lo ad v'chlal. The original gzeira included everybody from 20 until 60. Even those that were exactly 20. In the end, Hashem did not include those that were exactly 20. Only those that were above 20 died, and not those that were exactly 20 died. So there was the interpretation of 20 to 60, right, would depend on that. The explanation now makes sense why it was 15,000 a year, because it was 15,000 a year, and in the end they were spared 15,000. The other thing it explains is what was the avelut. Why did Hashem not speak to Moshe? Because they were supposed to die. They were supposed to die, and they were atzuvim. They were upset. And since they're abtzuvim, we know that the Shekhinah is not shore mitoch atzvut. Shekhinah doesn't come to a person when they're upset. And therefore, until it was clear that the gzera was mitpatel, they did not receive a, right, memra from Hashem. They didn't receive any dibur from Hashem. So the problem was not the fact that they were supposed to die, but the problem, I mean, that they did die, but the problem was that the fact that they were upset that they were going to die, and despondency is what caused the Shekhinah not to be there. But once they cleared up that wasn't Gezerah, and Tosfos goes, well, we could say the same thing for the Rashbam. The Rashbam said that they thought they were supposed to die. Those people laid down in the Midbar, thought they were supposed to die. The only real problem with that, and the biggest problem with this whole Medrash, which always bothered me, and the same problem with the Rashbam's explanation is, didn't everybody know who was going to die that year? I mean, if, right, every year they're supposed to dig their Kfarim, and it's only from those that are 60, that reach 60 that year. Then every year you knew who was, what's this whole game? That everybody lies down, they get up, and everybody who was 60 died. I mean, okay, so, you know, after maybe the first 2 years, they didn't figure it out. But after a while, they figured out what was happening over here. So first of all, you know, what's the question? Number two is, if we already knew, according to the Rashbam, that the previous year everybody died, I mean, everybody who reached 60 was already dead, then what are we doing with the people here? Why is anybody lying down this year? I mean, it was over. Anybody who was in the first camp is dead already, according to Rashbam. There was nobody who deserved to die this last year. So why is anybody digging graves? Why is anything continuing at this point in time? So it's very difficult. That explanation is, it always bothered me again, that who was digging a grave that year and who thought they should die? Because they were all gone. Unless, you know, it's a type of minhag, right? The things that happen in shuls, where there's a minhag that started, right? There was everybody, when they went to the Aron, every time they used to bow down, dig down to go to the Aron. Somebody asked, where did the minhag come from? They said, nobody knows where the minhag came from. There's one old man in the shul that says, oh, there used to be a beam that went across over here, so everybody had to duck to go. So when the guy removed the beam, everybody still ducks to go down. So maybe it's the same thing here. Every year they used to go and dig graves. So the same thing they did over here. But that is a difficulty with the midrash and difficulty with the explanation of the Rashbam. He also runs into the same problem that Rashi runs into in Chumash, which is that it assumes that there's a standard age for everybody, which is also not so simple. I mean, that how do you have everybody who turns 60? Not everybody turns 60 at the same date over a complete year, right? And then what? Then they postponed? That means that people died at a different age, because not everybody was exactly 60 when they reached Tu B'Av. I mean, somebody could be almost 61, a day short of 61, and would die on Tu B'Av, right? Somebody was a day over 61. Right, so that's you have to say something to that effect, but it's not as clean as the Medrash makes it out to feel like. Rashi has the same problem in Chumash when he talks about the count. How could the count be exactly the same a year later? So Rashi says, oh, because they didn't cross over Nisan. What do you mean? They didn't cross over Tishrei. They didn't cross over Tishrei. Okay, so what? I mean, that doesn't mean not everybody has the same. Like, when you talk about kings, you count from a specific day, no matter, even if they didn't have a full year of reign. So therefore, the next year starts with Tishrei. But for people, that's not true. People have a birthday, and that birthday is what determines the age, not a fixed Tishrei, and oh, you're a year older now on Tishrei. That's not the case. Ulamar Yom Shabito Bo Hoshea Ben Allah, Pardesa Ot, Shashivi Revam Alan Drachim. The day that, and Tu B'Av Hoshea Ben Allah, nullified the, with the guards, Rav Avraham ben Nevat faced a significant problem, which was that when Achia Shiloni comes to him and says, listen, the Machut's going to split, you're going to be the king over the Ten Shvatim, he faces one big problem, which is that when they split the Machut, Yerushalayim is left with Yehuda. So the religious center is left with Malchei Yehuda. So what's Rav Avraham ben Nevat going to do? Every year, three times a year, everybody's going to go up to the Beit HaMikdash. And he's going to be, basically, what they're showing is that Malchut Israel is a subpar Malchut, because they don't have any religious center there. And truthfully, that's what the Ramban writes. The Minyana Diyoma by Chanukah, the Ramban writes that when Achia Shiloni came, he thinks that people, when they persisted to have a Malchut Israel, that was a mistake and a violation of the bracha that Yaakov gave to Yehuda, that lo yasur shevet to mechulkek ben raglav, that Yehuda is entitled to the kingdom. What about Yeravam? He had a Navi tell him that he could be the king. That's only a temporary measure. That's not something that should be persistent or consistent. And therefore, anybody who was a king after that, or who continued to create a Malchut, was in violation of that taking away the kingdom. And then you know how it would have worked. If they all went back to Yerushalayim, there would only been about one generation of a new king, because they would have realized that Yehuda is still the center, and then we have to fix this problem. So he says, Yerav Menadad does two things. One is that he puts up a galim, right? He puts up the Iglei Azahav, one in the south, and one in the north, at each end of his kingdom, right? And then he puts up guards to prevent people from being all the regal. It prevents them. So, Moshe ben Allah goes in, and he was the only king that does not, all the other kings of Israel basically say that they did, but they went with Yeravam ben Nevat. They basically did the same things that Yeravam ben Nevat did, but lo yisiru, or even if they don't, lo yisiru at the da 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 da. That's it. Right, they didn't undo it. But here, by him, by Moshe ben Allah, it says, he wasn't like the Malchei Yisrael that were before him. So what does it mean that he wasn't like them? That he took away the guards that were on the way. So Ramat Namar Yom Shenitnu Haruge Beit Al Gvura was the day that Haruge Beit were given to burial. Damar Ramat Na Oto Yom Shenitnu Haruge Beit Al Gvura Tiknu BeYavna Atov VeMeitiv. The bracha, the fourth bracha in Birkat HaMazon, which was added, Atov Shalos Yisricho, that the bodies did not decay or rot. Right, VeMeitiv Shenitnu the Gvura, that they were allowed to be buried. This was in a massive slaughter in Beitar by the Romans to put down the Merit Bar Kochva, and so the Tova that came out of this, which seems like unbelievable. This was classified as a Tova, but the fact that after all of this massacre, they were allowed, the bodies did not rot, and they were allowed to bury it. Chachamim, first of all, Gozer, Atov Meitiv, and number two is Tu Be'av was that day. That's a Yom HaSimcha. Rabbi Rav Yosef Tamarel, Yom Sheposkrim Bo Mal Lichot Eitzim LeMaracha. It's a day that they stopped cutting wood for the Mizbeach. Why? Datanya Blizzar Gdolo Mer, Kaven Shigia Khamisha Bsar Ba'av, when 15 Vav reaches Tashako Tashashko Hashokhama, the heat of the sun starts to fade. Vayu Kortim Itzin Lamaracha, they no longer cut wood for the Mizbeach. Because the wood for the Mizbeach is two things are required. Number one is that it be absolutely dry, there be no moisture in the wood. Number two is that it will not have any woods, no worms inside of the wood. And how do you do that? The only way you can have that is if the wood is extremely dry. That's extremely dry. That's wood that's been exposed to the hottest, to the period of time, to the real, you know, heat of the sun. There it's dried out, so it won't give any smoke off. And number two, there won't be any tolaim. Once you reach Chamisha Ba'av, once you're 15 up, it starts to be that the sun's not hot enough, and then there's moisture that remains in the wood, which makes that there's both smoke and worms that are in it. And that's the statement here. I'm Rav Menashe, Bekor Yom Tavar Magal. The day they call it, they're breaking the sickle. And the day that they stop using the cutting instruments, because they no longer cut wood from that day onward. What exactly is, by the way, what exactly is the simcha with this? They stop cutting wood from the Mizbeach. I mean, I don't know what type of simcha that is exactly. So the Rishbam,
where'd they get wood after that?
Not enough. They stockpiled. That was it. Till that point, they stockpiled enough for the rest of the year. Like the water here in Eretz Yisrael. You have to, if you don't collect water in this winter, you don't have water during the summer. So over here, if you don't get wood during the summer, you don't have wood for the winter. So that's the explanation. But what is the simchas that Rishbam tries to say? They were able to complete the mitzvah. They collected all the wood for the year. So that was the simcha. It was the party for the last day that they finally got all the wood they needed for the subsequent year. Now it's an interesting line in the Gemara. Mikan velech, the mosif yosif, shena mosif yasif. So the Gemara says, from this point on, anyone who adds will be added to. Anyone who does not add, yasif. So the Gemara says, ma yasif. What does it mean, yasif? Then Rav Yosef tikvarei ime. His mother will bury him. Yasif means not yesof elemav, because that would have been obvious, but yasif means that he will be, right, it will be cut off, meaning that he will be bezrichram lo yasuf mizram, right? That their memory will not be, right, wiped out. So yasif here means wiped out. It means similar to mitah, but wiped out. What does this mean? It means that from, and it's interesting that it's on Tu B'Av, which is not necessarily the case, but the nights are getting longer. The days are getting shorter. And therefore, from this point on, from Tu B'Av and onward, people have to start learning, not only during the day, they have to add some learning at night. Because if they don't add a learning at night, their learning part of the day is going to get shorter and shorter. So they have to extend their day into the night, starting with Tu B'Av. And so that means that Yosef, the person who learns more, right, Yosef, will have a longer life. The one who does not add to his day, lo Yosef, will not have a longer life, will be buried by his mother. I mean that you have to add to your Torah learning during the period of time that the days get shorter.
So,
very good. The Rabbanan, Shifa Kiflu et Kol HaOlam Kulo. Right, there are seven people that extended their lives, connect you from Adam HaRishon until today. And what are they? Mitushelach Ra'a Adam HaRishon. And these are from the Psukim, you can see this. Mitushelach overlapped with Adam HaRishon. Shem Ra'a Mitushelach. Shem Sa'a Mitushelach. Mitushelach dies right before the Mabul. And Shem at that point in time is 98 years old. Yaakov Ra'at Shem, right? We know that. Yaakov, if you do the ages of Shem, Yaakov sees Shem. And that's why he went to Yeshivat Shem Ve'ever. That's the Drashat Chazal about the missing years of Yaakov. Amram Ra'ad Yaakov, that is Misvara, we don't know, but we assume that Amram saw Yaakov because we know that Levi was Miyordei Mitzrayim, and Amram is the right oldest child, right, of, I'm sorry, Kahat was Miyordei Mitzrayim, and we know that the oldest child of Kahat is Amram. So the annoying assumption is that Kahat was born in those first couple of years that they were in Mitzrayim, and therefore Yaakov saw Amram. Achia Shiloni Ra'ad Amram. So this has got to be Gemara Gmirla, we don't know this, but Achia Shiloni must have seen Amram. And Eliyahu ra'at Achia Shiloni. And then Eliyahu saw Achia Shiloni. Now Achia Shiloni is the Navi, who is the one that instructs Yerubbaal ben Nevat to split away from the kingdom. So we're talking about, obviously the people that we're talking about who lived the longest here, the biggest gap here is Achia Shiloni, who basically lives from the time of Amram, means in the time of Mitzrayim. He's someone who was in Shibud Mitzrayim, and then lives to the point where he anoints Yerubbaal ben Nevat. And he's Eliyahu sees Achia Shiloni v'adayin kayam, and he's still alive. Eliyahu lo meit because Allah Shamayim, right, b'soar ha'esh, and therefore he never died. So my says, v'Achia Shiloni v'at Amram? How could Achia Shiloni ever see Amram? V'aktiv lo notar mehem ish kim kalei b'nifuneh v'yeshua benun. The basic problem, if he's in Shibud Mitzrayim and he's yotzei mi Mitzrayim, that means that he was in the count that left Mitzrayim. Because if he saw Amram, how old was Amram, right? Amram dies, and then we know from the time that Amram dies until the end of Shibud Mitzrayim, we know there's at least 20 years. I mean, there has to be much more, but there's at least 20 years old, which means that if Achia Shiloni saw Amram, he had to be over the age of 20 when he left Mitzrayim. He was over the age of 20 when he left Mitzrayim. He was counted in the Midbar. He's counted in the Midbar. How did he get into Eretz Yisrael? So Amar Rav Huna, non exact Zeral Shubtosha Levi. Achia Shiloni is a Levi, and the Zeral was not on the Leviim, Dichtiv. By midbar ze yiplu pigrechem v'chol pikudechem n'chol mispachem b'ben esrim shana v'mala. That the people who are going to die in this midbar are those that are over the age of 20. Mi shepikudav m'ben esrim. That's for those that are counted from the age of 20. Yatsa shivto shalevi. It's Levi. It does not count for them. Shepikudav m'ben shloshim. So ben shloshim can be read two ways here. It could be shloshim yom or shloshim shana. Right? The shloshim yom because they were originally counted m'ben chodesh u'lamala. That we were counted. Or they were counted for Tzva Avodah, was from Shloshim at Chamishim. Right, from 30 to 50 is when they go. The Rashbam rejects the Shloshim Yom, because the Gemara always uses for Shloshim Yom, because Miben Chodesh. Doesn't use the term Shloshim. So it has to be Shloshim Shana, and he says it's the word Tzva. The word Tzva is used by the Pikud Bnei Israel from 20 and up. It's also used by the Levim, the Tzva Avodah. So each one's in a different army. One's in the army of, right, of the military side, and one's Tzva Avodah, is the army of Hashem. You know, doing the Avodat HaMikdash. So therefore, they have a different counting. They go from 30 to 50 and not from 20. So my says, Umshamar Svatim Lohayo? What do you mean? Oh, that's Achia Shiloni, the Levim are the only exceptions here? What about the fact that it says, Vatanya, Ye'ir ben Menashe, Machir ben Menashe, no Dumbi me Yaakov? I mean, it's obvious that they were doomed. We know that they were born in the days of Yaakov. I mean, we know that at the end of Gam, Right, Bnei Shlishim were born to Machir ben Menasheh. We know that they were around the time of Yosef, in the time of Yaakov. So they're already. And they didn't die until the time they entered into Eretz Yisrael. Shenemar, because it says, Veikul mehem anshei ha'oi, k'shalshim v'shishayish. That it says in the battle, the first battle with Ai, where Bnei Israel lose the battle. And there it says that about 36 people died. Vatanya Shlashim Shisha Mamash. Divi Rabbi Yehuda, who says 36 people died from Klai, so in that first battle. Amarlo Rabbi Chem Yochin Amar Shlashim Shisha does not say 36. Alo Neamar Ela Kish Shlashim Shisha. It uses the Kafat Dimyon like 36 people. Yair Ben Menasheh Shishanku Kerubah Shel Sanhedrin. That's like Yair Ben Menasheh, who's like equal to the majority of a Sanhedrin. Sanhedrin is 71. So the majority would be 36. So that means that it was Yair Ben Menasheh. If that's the case, he was around in the time of Yoshua.
Well, it suggests that he was not only around, but he was
right, so he was still, let's say Tzavah, but we know that already from Kalev ben Yefuneh. Kalev ben Yefuneh, when he conquers Hebron, and he's clear at the time that he offers, he says, I'm 80 years old today, and I'm still strong as I was when we went in with the Meraglim, and he was out there, he conquered Hebron, which was a very difficult area to conquer at the age of 80. So not there it's explicit in the Navi, so I'm saying that wasn't unusual.
Although he was a lot more than 80.
Yes, I agree, but I'm just saying that at least we know that already, that there was at 80 somebody's going out and conquering Hebron. Ella, Amar Rav Acha b'Yaakov, n'gzak zerel, lo apachot min ben esrim, val yod termen shishim. It's a different solution. Rav Acha b'Yaakov says, the gzerel was only from 20 to 60. It was not above 60. The Pasuk only says, mi ben esrim umala. Pasuk only says from 20 and up. It does not give an upper limit. How do you know that? So lo apachot b'men esrim dechtiv mi ben esrim shana olamala. So we know not, less than 20, we're not gzerel gzerel because it says 20 and up. But what are you going to do? Below yet to ben shishim. Where do you know? Right? Gamar umalam. Why? Gamar umalam malam erachin. You learn malam malam from erachin. What is that? Malahan yet to ben shishim kopachot ben kaf. Just like erachin, over 60 has the same din as less than 20, which is not true. Avkan yet to ben shishim kopachot ben shishim. Just so too over here, over 60 is the same as less than 20.
But is it?
They don't.
And they're both not the same.
Exactly. But the answer you have to say is that 20 and 60 has a specific erech. Those that are under 20 have less, and over 60 also have less. They are not the same amount. Over 60 and less than 20 do not have the equal erech, but they are both different from 20 to 60, which means that 20 to 60 is a defined category. And therefore, when you talk about somebody over 20, then the category that you're putting them in is between 20 and 60. And that's what the drasha over here is. Right, that the drasha is that 20 till 60 is a category, and that 20 to 60 is the same thing here by the gzera. If you're over 20, then only until 60 was the gzera. That solves the problem for a number of people here, which would be that they were over the age of 60. If they're over the age of 60, which would be easy for Yair ben Menasheh and Machir ben Menasheh, who were born way back at the time of Yosef, and they've been through Shibud Mitzrayim, they're clearly over the age of 60 at this point in time.
So they were included in the
Akla
of their fathers.
What about
those who were above 60?
Right. So that's just a question based on whether they were in the Pikud or not in the Pikud, right? I don't know. This is only about the Gzirat Miraglim. Question is, were they included in the Pikud? So they might have been included in the Pikud, but not included in the Gzirat Miraglim, because here they have a specific drasha about it. I would assume the same. I would agree, by the way. I would agree that they were. Well, it's, you know, where did Yair Machir take their... Where did they, it says explicitly in Evar Yodin.